Chapter 94. Mr. Tulkinghorn rises with his hands in his pockets and walks into one of the window recesses. Now, I have no time to waste. In the midst of his perfect assumption of indifference, he directs a sharp look at the trooper, taking care to stand with his own back to the light and to have the other with his face towards it. "Well, sir," says Mr. George, "this man with me is the other party implicated in this unfortunate affair nominally, only nominally, and my sole object is to prevent his getting into trouble on my account. He is a most respectable man with a wife and family, formerly in the Royal Artillery, my friend. I don't care a pinch of snuff for the whole Royal Artillery establishment, officers, men, tumbrils, wagons, horses, guns, and ammunition. 'Tis likely, sir. But I care a good deal for Bagnet, and his wife and family being injured on my account. And if I could bring them through this matter, I should have no help for it, but to give up without any other consideration what you wanted of me the other day. Have you got it here?"
"I have got it here, sir."
"Sergeant," the lawyer proceeds in his dry, passionless manner, far more hopeless in the dealing with than any amount of vehemence, "make up your mind, while I speak to you, for this is final. After I have finished speaking, I have closed the subject, and I won't reopen it. Understand that. You can leave here, for a few days, what you say you have brought here if you choose. You can take it away at once if you choose. In case you choose to leave it here, I can do this for you. I can replace this matter on its old footing, and I can go so far besides as to give you a written undertaking that this man Bagnet shall never be troubled in any way until you have been proceeded against to the utmost, that your means shall be exhausted before the creditor looks to his. This is in fact all but freeing him. Have you decided?" The trooper puts his hand into his breast, and answers with a long breath, "I must do it, sir." So Mr. Tulkinghorn, putting on his spectacles, sits down and writes the undertaking, which he slowly reads, and explains to Bagnet, who has all this time been staring at the ceiling, and who puts his hand on his bald head again, under this new verbal shower bath, and seems exceedingly in need of the old girl through whom to express his sentiments. The trooper then takes from his breast pocket a folded paper, which he lays with an unwilling hand at the lawyer's elbow. "'Tis only a letter of instructions, sir. The last I ever had from him. Look at a millstone, Mr. George, for some change in its expression, and you will find it quite as soon as in the face of Mr. Tulkinghorn, when he opens and reads the letter. He refolds it, and lays it in his desk with a countenance as unperturbable as death. Nor has he anything more to say, or do but to nod once in the same frigid and discourteous manner, and to say briefly, 'You can go. Show these men out, there.' Being shown out, they repair to Mr. Bagnet's residence to dine. Boiled beef and greens constitute the day's variety on the former repast of boiled pork and greens, and Mrs. Bagnet serves out the meal in the same way and seasons it with the best of temper, being that rare sort of old girl, that she receives good to her arms without a hint that it might be better, and catches light from any little spot of darkness near her. The spot on this occasion is the darkened brow of Mr. George. He is unusually thoughtful and depressed. At first Mrs. Bagnet trusts to the combined endearments of Quebec and Malta to restore him, but finding those young ladies sensible that their existing bluffy is not the bluffy of their usual frolicsome acquaintance, she winks off the light infantry, and leaves him to deploy at leisure on the open ground of the domestic hearth. But he does not. He remains in close order, clouded and depressed. During the lengthy cleaning up and patenting process, when he and Mr. Bagnet are supplied with their pipes, he is no better than he was at dinner. He forgets to smoke, looks at the fire and ponders, lets his pipe out, fills the breast of Mr. Bagnet with perturbation and dismay by showing that he has no enjoyment of tobacco. Therefore, when Mrs. Bagnet at last appears, rosy from the invigorating pail, and sits down to her work, Mr. Bagnet growls, "Old girl," and winks monitions to her to find out what's the matter. Why, George, says Mrs. Bagnet, quietly threading her needle. How low you are.
Am I? Not good company?
Well, I am afraid I am not.
He ain't at all like Loafy, mother, cries little Malta.
Because he ain't well, I think, mother, adds Quebec.
Sure that's a bad sign, not to be like Luffy too,
returns the trooper, kissing the young damsels. But it's true, with a sigh, true, I am afraid. These little ones are always right.
George, says Mrs. Bagnet, working busily, if I thought you cross enough to think of anything, that a shrill old soldier's wife who could have bitten her tongue off afterwards, and ought to have done it almost said this morning, I don't know what I shouldn't say to you now.
My kind soul of a darling, returns the trooper. Not a morsel of it.
Because really and truly, George, what I said and meant to say, was that I trusted Lignum to you, and was sure you'd bring him through it.
And you have brought him through it, noble.
Thank ye, my dear, says George. I am glad of your good opinion.
And giving Mrs. Bagnet's hand, with her work in it, a friendly shake, for she took her seat beside him, the trooper's attention is attracted to her face. After looking at it for a little while as she plies her needle, he looks to young Woolwich, sitting on his stool in the corner, and beckons that fifer to him.
See there, my boy, says George, very gently smoothing the mother's hair with his hand, there's a good loving forehead for you. All bright with love of you, my boy. A little touched by the sun, and the weather through following your father about and taking care of you, but as fresh and wholesome as a ripe apple on a tree.
Mr. Bagnet's face expresses, so far as in its wooden material lies, the highest approbation and acquiescence.
The time will come, my boy, pursues the trooper, when this hair of your mother's will be gray, and this forehead all crossed, and recrossed with wrinkles, and a fine old lady she'll be then.
Take care, while you are young, that you can think in those days, I never whitened a hair of her dear head, I never marked a sorrowful line in her face.
Apostrophe, apostrophe, for of all the many things that you can think of when you are a man, you had better have that by you, Woolwich.
Mr. George concludes by rising from his chair, seating the boy beside his mother in it, and saying, with something of a hurry about him, that he'll smoke his pipe in the street a bit. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.